Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Everybody loves a lover. I'm a lover. Everybody loves me. Anyhow, that's how I feel. Wow, I feel just like a Pollyanna.
Well, I have tarot card decks, and I sometimes will pull a couple out and see what's going on.
Do you have the celebrity deck or do you have the classic?
What's a celebrity deck?
Well, for instance, they have, instead of the king and all whatever the things are, they have Daniel Craig, they have Oprah, they have different ones. And they have, it's a completely different way of reading.
No, I do.
They
have
also have the agent deck.
I didn't realize that.
Different agencies.
Called.
They have UTA, CAA.
I have CAA,
decks,
even though
decks.
I'm not with CAA, I have CAA.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I use those for black magic, though, the CAA
yes.
deck.
Well, just to kind of delight you, I recently finished a job and the director of the movie gave me a wooden tarot of the magician.
Ooh, that is gorgeous.
That's very handsome.
It's really pretty.
Yes.
That's that classic tarot deck too.
Yes.
Have you ever done tarot cards?
No.
I have not. I've heard a lot about it and it's on my list.
What about when you were a kid? This is a totally different thing. And this is a very occulty and kind of, I think it's a little scary. Did you ever do a Ouija board when you were a kid?
I had a Nerf Ouija board, which is fun because you can't get splinters. It floats. Nobody gets hurt.
Oh, man.
And it's never used for summoning up spirits. It's just, as it says on the package, it's just good, clean fun.
I'm not familiar with that. I'll have to check that out.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds really cool. So you guys are the second couple who are participating in a mariage that we've had on the podcast because we had Mary Steenburgen and Ted Danson on. So mm-hmm. this is fun because, dear listeners, as you may or may not know, these two cuties are married and have been for lo these many years. How many years have you guys been?
35. Let the record show that Christopher just made hand gestures denoting the number 35.
It's a new way of doing a podcast where you just simply use a lot of sign language. It works. If it ain't broke. 35 years of marriage, gosh. And he's getting ready to do another hand gesture. Did I interrupt you? I didn't want to interrupt.
No, I was just stretching.
Okay. That wasn't maybe a full range of motion. You just half raised your hand up. Yeah. Okay, well, take your time. There he goes again. You're still stretching or was that a hand gesture? Okay, I can't tell which is. It looks like hand gestures, but I guess it's stretching. So how did you guys meet? If I may pry into your personal lives.
Go, man.
I'm,
go.
I,
Do it. Take it.
Can we do a shorter version of this?
Do you want me to do a speed round?
Anyone. Someone do a speed round.
Well, do you want it?
As long as you don't edit.
Well, of course I'm going to edit.
Well, then it becomes longer.
Okay. Right, but then it becomes correct.
We've got plenty of time.
Do it, if you do it fast, because otherwise I'm...
Okay, here's the fast version. I saw Chris's photograph in Rolling Stone magazine and said out loud to my friend Deborah Hill, I am going to marry him. I had never seen him. I had never met him. I left my number with his agent, who Deborah Hill had already pre-called and told that I would be calling. Are you counting?
No, I'm just stretching.
Okay.
he and really keeps his hands limber.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh. 35, baby. I left my number with his agent. He never called me. I dated someone else that broke up. I took that person to the airport. I left the airport and went to Hugo's in West Hollywood.
Yeah.
I sat down with my friend Melanie Griffith and her then husband Steve Bauer. And
did you drop something?
Say again?
Did you drop something?
No, you know what? I'm doing it's
no, I was me.
No, I didn't drop something. No,
I think that's really dropping.
I walked in and I sat down. And, you know, two tables away, Chris was sitting there facing me. I gestured, he gestured with his hand like that, silently. I gestured with my hand like that, silently. A few minutes later, he got up to leave. He stood at the table silently and shrugged his shoulders and waved. And I waved back. And he called me the next day and we got married 4 months later.
Holy crap.
I just got chills.
5 months later.
I've got now, chills right now.
Did you?
Oh my
on
God.
Your hand? Where do you get chills? On here or in the back?
I just now got them on my arms, but earlier something happened and I got chills on my arms and then I got them on my face.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah.
Now, what
so
if,
that was that. Yeah.
What if he had only been stretching at that table and, and you misunderstood his gesticulation?
Exactly. Exactly.
It was clear. Yeah. He was saying, I got your message, but I never called you. And then he got up to leave, basically saying, okay, goodbye.
Wow. That's fantastic.
But at that point, then, of course, he did call. And
then we had a date. And at that first date, I kind of knew on that date.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he was just as the tiny little addition, he was about to go do Saturday Night for a year. He was leaving August 8th. By the way, that date was June 28th when we met at the restaurant. We went out July 2nd. He was leaving August 8th for a year to do SNL. I was starting the movie Perfect in Los Angeles in August. We went back and forth every weekend. We got engaged in September. We got married right when my movie finished and his season ended. And he came back to Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's amazing. Gosh,
that's so cool.
It's a good story.
First of all, Hugo's was the spot. I mean,
yeah, if you're looking for a long-term marriage, Hugo's
starts
on Santa Monica.
Because that was 1985, if my math is not incorrect.
It was 1984, actually.
Oh,
84.
Really?
And the if this had been Tale of the Pup restaurant, or
yes, place, would have been a very different set of hand gestures.
Very different scenario. It could have taken us 6 or 7 months to get married. But it happened to be at Hugo's.
Yeah, well, Hugo's also puts the pedal to the metal.
Still there, by the way.
So. Yes, but by the way, still there.
Yeah.
It is owned by a married couple, and they catered the wedding.
Oh,
that's gorgeous.
That's cool. I used to go to Hugo's all the time, and it really was kind of the place to be.
Emily and Tom Kaplan.
Hmm.
Wow.
Well, I think
that's
we're
a
all
great story.
We have a pretty solid awareness, those of us with human senses, of Jamie's beauty and intelligence and power and talent.
And wit.
But Chris, I'm curious, what was it about her that, because that's pretty intense that on a first date that you would say, I found her?
Well, that had never happened to me before. So it's difficult to articulate what that was. It was that moment of just knowing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, I was not familiar with her work. I had not, it had to do with the person.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just that feeling of this is the real thing and knowing that.
Mm.
And I, it's not to be mystical, but that's what it was.
Gosh, that's
no, I
so
love
nice.
That. I had a similar sensation, when we first met. It took, I don't know, some weeks. I mean, it didn't take long, but one day we'd started dating, and I was driving up in my pickup truck to Valencia. I was driving up the freeway, and I remember exactly where I was when it occurred to me in a sort of mystical way, oh, this is it. You're getting married to Megan. And I remember being resentful that I wasn't consulted. I was like, oh, okay. That settles that.
And you guys must have been in your 20s.
Not me.
I was 26. Chris was 30. You were what?
70. I was 70. Oh, wait a minute. You're talking about Roman numerals? Or are we talking about? Yes, I was older. I still am older. And yes, that was that.
Okay, I have two more questions.
What kind of pickup were you driving? F-150?
No, it was a crappy old Dodge Ram that I loved.
Interesting.
That Megan had seen used. It was for sale. She had seen it sitting in somebody's yard. And I was riding a motorcycle at the time.
That's not parked on Laurel Canyon.
When we first started dating, and she said, "Hey, I'll make you a deal. I'll help you purchase that pickup truck for your carpentry business if you get rid of the motorcycle."
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And I said, "Put her there, lady."
Yeah, not a fan of motorcycles. Okay, I do have two more quick questions about this before we move on. But where was the first date, if you don't mind my asking?
We went to Chianti, which was an Italian restaurant on Melrose, and Chris was coming from a Spinal Tap photo session because you had your guitar, yeah. And I was coming from a rehearsal for Perfect or some probably aerobics class or something, and we still have the credit card receipt from from that date, and I was training for the movie Perfect, so I had stopped eating, So I think I could only have a Caesar salad. Anyway, that's where we went.
And so you must have known, if you saved the credit card receipt, you must have known too, Jamie, right?
I have every receipt. I have every ticket stub of every movie my kids have ever seen. I'm that, weirdly enough, for somebody who is somewhat famous divester, get out of my drawers. I am weirdly enough that person.
Where do you keep it all, though?
I have trunks for my kids. I have this
labeled. Hole. Everything is labeled. We have a basement, which is an unusual thing in Los Angeles, and there are boxes.
I'm going to go tell them to stop. We have people. It's all happening. This is live. People.
We have a film crew that are moving some C stands and stuff. So,
what are you shooting?
We're doing, it sounds weird because Game of Thrones kind of just went off, but we're doing, the next season. It's not official. I mean, it's not official.
That's a big deal.
It's not sanctioned in any
did
way.
You clear that? Did you clear that
no,
with anyone?
No, I'm going to, it's just a lawyer thing.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah. This is hand puppets. This is not live action.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They're not too precious about that brand. It's cool.
No, and I think that wasn't such a big thing for that phrase. No. So I think, and who doesn't like a nice hand puppet? You know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Jamie, I wanted to ask you then, conversely, when you guys were, you'd seen this picture of Chris.
What was it about the picture? Can you describe the
photograph and Rolling
Stone? Sure.
Yeah.
They were promoting Spinal Tap, but it was a picture by Aaron Rappaport. and it was the three of the gentlemen, but they were just wearing regular old button-down shirts. Chris was in a plaid, which we still have, that shirt. And he was on the end. Harry was in the middle. And they had their sort of arms around each other. And Chris had a sort of a smirky, like a, you know, Chris does not like to get his photograph taken still.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's sort of kind of going like that. And I don't know. I just, and by the way, I didn't see him in character until I turned the page. So the, you know, you turn the page and then they were in full character. So, you know, it was, I just saw this guy sort of smirking. I don't know. He was handsome.
But that's kind of a psychic thing. And you see, you don't even need the tarot cards. That's why you've never done them, because you don't need them.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I joke you not. I said out loud to my friend, Deborah, "Ooh, I'm going to marry that guy." I mean, I had no idea. And
now to be fair, you'd also said that when you saw a picture of Ben Kingsley. So it's not as if this is necessarily a custom sort of thing.
Was it Deborah Winger?
No, it was Deborah Hill. She produced and co-wrote Halloween. She was my best girlfriend at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And we were in my apartment in West Hollywood.
Crazy.
Where in West Hollywood?
It was in the Colonial House. It was the sort of beautiful...
Oh, yeah.
The landmark... it's actually on Havenhurst. It's south of Sunset, one block west of Laurel Canyon.
That's
and
yeah.
It was a landmark building. Betty Davis was one of the residents in the building. It was filled with artists and actors and
that's
people
a
in the
famous
yeah.
famous building. Cool building.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, you had a lot of other cool people in there in that building?
Yes, we only know cool people, actually. Uh-huh. I mean,
are you including us in that or no?
Well, it's inferred.
Okay.
You will checking. Come to know us.
But we have come to know you guys because, well, we can't really talk about how we know because it's very top secret.
No, it's
but
secret.
We've met on occasion for the past several years.
And my husband has been to your
I've
husband's
actually been
shop.
I've been to your wood shop, Nick, which is amazing. And you've not been to where I tie my flies and play music. But one day after all this is winding down, I hope you do.
We have a standing date. And I was thinking about that this morning. That's one thing I'm excited to do is begin to... The five employees of my wood shop... I'm doing my best to take care of them in this weird time, but you know, people's custom furniture in Los Angeles is, I'm not going to consider that an essential business. So I'm making them stay home and keeping everybody safe as best I can. But now as things are lasting longer, I'm starting to figure out how I can get myself back into my shop just to keep myself from going insane and work on some projects. And so I was thinking about one of the best things that ever happened to me. Chris came to see my shop and I was working on my very first batch of ukuleles that I'm making. Mm-hmm. And it was the first fretboard that I'd made from scratch. The frets are the bars that you use to denote the different notes and you press down on the different frets to change the string length to achieve your notes. And Chris ran his hand up and down the underside of the neck and said very plainly, this is garbage.
I don't think I actually said that. But the reason I said that in a different way was that when we had lunch one day, you were feeling the bottom of the table in the restaurant we were in. And I said, "What are you doing?" Not to be rude, but because I couldn't see what you were doing. And you said, "It's called the blind man's test, where you feel the finish work on the underside of something, which should be done as well as the top. In a guitar neck, whether it's a guitar ukulele, high-end instruments are filed and polished beautifully, and you don't feel any snag, essentially.
Yeah. Well, which I really appreciated because, you know, for those that don't know, Chris is, and I'm sorry to say this to your face, but he's a pretty virtuosic string player and folk musician and singer. You may have seen some of his work in some of his films. But so somebody who's such an exquisite player to have that lesson is sort of jumps me forward as a builder, because now I know going forward, it probably would have taken me a long time to learn that my frets were garbage. Now I know you've shown me that before I start putting these in people's hands to play, I have to have them stand up to this test of running your hand along the frets. And that tells you by feel that they're polished, that took the care to do it right.
So you're a luthier.
I'm an aspiring luthier.
Oh, wannabe luthier.
Yeah.
Well, he's making them. They're making them.
Well, so you're a luthier.
Well, okay.
I will commission, assuming you get over the hurdle of the frets, I will commission one, a nice mahogany one.
You know, we're recording this.
Yeah.
Okay. When you and I agree that I'm up to it, I'll be happy to take that commission.
Okay.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Did either, I don't know what, why this just popped into my head, but did either one of you do theater? I mean, Jamie Lee, probably not, because you're such a Hollywood baby.
And I don't stay up that late.
You do go to bed really early. Yeah.
I did a lot of theater. I grew up in New York City, going back and forth between New York City and London with my family. And I did a lot of theater in New York when I started, when I was in my late teens.
Hmm.
For many years, I did theater off Broadway and on Broadway before I did other things.
As an actor. And then how did you get into writing and directing? Was that just something that came naturally?
I was 22. I started working at the National Lampoon. It was the first year of that magazine. And we started doing albums, record albums, which I did, wrote and co-wrote music for, singing, comedy as well. And then that morphed into a off-Broadway play, which I co-wrote, called Lemmings. And then it occurred to me that I was doing more than one thing. And then eventually that organically moved into me doing everything. And in my films, which I co-write typically, I also do a lot of the music. And I'm in them and I direct them. And so it's kind of ended up being what I do.
You did a sort of a Kind Hearts and Coronets film called, a noir called...
Called Dead Ringer.
Dead Ringer, where
yes,
he...
which was not seen.
Right, but you made that for what reason?
Ego?
No, but I mean, I'm serious.
Like, oh, what, for what reason?
Well, I mean,
well,
like
I felt
you...
that it's something I wanted to try to do. I played all the parts.
Right, but I mean, you clearly produced it. It's, yeah. it's shot like a noir. It's costumed.
I don't know.
Like
I guess I thought, even as a kid, because I did all these different voices and played music, that that was just a natural thing for me to do, maybe.
But did you make that? Don't
I got surprised.
I know. But did you make that as a short? That
yes,
you would,
it was a short.
No, I understand. Did you plan on it being seen by people?
It was seen on cable. Well, you're probably too young to remember this, the young people that are interviewing us, but when cable was cable, it wasn't what cable is now. Well, they didn't even call it cable anymore. Maybe, I don't know what they call it. But there was something called cable, which was really out there. It was just the most bizarre programming. Anyone could throw stuff up there. So you had people doing interview shows, crazy, interesting, mostly bad, but funny stuff. And there was a so-called network, which I can't remember the name of, and a group of people I knew, we did a bunch of things. Rob Reiner, Billy Crystal, and I put together about an hour of material, and it was on one of those things. And it was the only way you could do that. There was no HBO, there was no Showtime, there was nothing else. I missed that because it was really goofy. It was, do you know Skippy Lowe? Do you know who that is?
Mm-mm. No.
You should look up or write down Skip E. Lowe, Skippy Lowe, because he had an interview show that would be worth your diving into.
I remember in New York, there were all those crazy cable access shows.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. And in the 90s, because I did a couple of Broadway shows in the 90s, and there, you know, all this other stuff that we have now didn't exist yet. And so I remember watching a lot of those. It was fascinating.
Well, I don't know if anyone's archived them. It started in the 70s, probably in the mid-70s, these things popped up. And you could give them $3, and essentially you could buy a little studio time. And it was amusing, shall we say.
Remember there was that woman? Did she do restaurant reviews?
Don't know.
Oh, there was an odd woman. I remember she just sort of sat there and talked to the camera. Do you remember that one?
I don't, but there were hundreds of them.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's where that showed.
There were a lot of sex ones.
There was a lot of that was a separate thing. That was a different.
Oh, that was
it got later in the evening. It suddenly went right into the heart of it, as we say. It went deep into crotchless panty world.
Yeah, right.
Mm. And that was actually the title of the show.
It's a catchy title. Maybe you guys should reconsider the name of your new puppet show, Crotchless Panty World 2. Jamie Lee, when I was in college, I saw Halloween, and I don't even like scary movies, but I loved that movie. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, she's so cool. She's so pretty. And she's like running and being brave. And
she's
doing
like
all
running.
These things.
That would be the title of my book. And
do.
She's like running.
You're such a badass. Right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of your thing, but you are a badass.
She can be.
I would say that the...
Under what circumstances?
Well, I mean that she can play the badass, but then she can obviously do other things. She's done a billion movies.
But I think in real life, you're a badass is what I guess I'm saying.
No. See, that's where we don't know each other really well.
Yeah.
You know, I would say that if anything, I'm trying to be...
The puppets are loud today.
What is happening? Hold on.
The puppets have come to life.
They're having like a big argument or something.
Wow. Well, I perceive her as a badass. So in
she's uber competent, and that's different than being a badass, maybe.
No, I think
Lee was a badass.
I honestly hope.
John Gielgud is a badass.
I would hope that what will have developed is actually a whole different thing. Much quieter and much more delicate than, you know, badass is just, it feels very, you know, brazen and kind of hard. And I am,
I'm not heroic.
But I don't, that's not something I would say about myself, obviously.
Well, that's what we say about you in the privacy of our own home. So,
but to me, heroism is heart. Heroism is the ability to access your heart. That to me is heroic because it is the only thing that will actually continue this. The rest of it is dross and fun and funny and all that.
That's why you're a badass. That's why you're heroic because you have those beliefs. Okay, what's that framed piece of cuteness behind you guys?
Well, that is a photograph by a friend of mine named Shauna Ankenbrandt, who took a picture in the south of France of these two older people.
Oh, and it's really good. People in bathing suits.
But I'm going to tell you what was there because it will make you laugh. So obviously we are seeing each other in bed because that was the whole idea that we're supposed to be in bed. I even have Pilly. Where's Pilly? Where'd Pilly go? Oh, my God. I even brought Pilly.
Oh, Pilly.
Because this is Pilly.
So when Jamie goes on a trip, she makes little notes if we're in a hotel, and it says, take Pilly, so that when we're leaving, and she's written it hundreds of times wherever we are, take Pilly.
Well, because
is
I don't want to
leave. Your
friend? Occasionally you've forgotten.
I have.
Pilly is a rectangular pillow, by the way.
Yes, it's a sort of a rectangular, thin pillow. But so recently, obviously, because of all of this downtime, we've been doing a lot of this Zoom communication or, you know, video communication. And for the last many years, I had two pieces of art hanging behind me, which were done by a 15-year-old girl, my niece, Lena Hines, who attended a very posh private school in Pasadena. And for her senior project, she took photographs of nude girls, and she crocheted with thread pubic hair on the photographs themselves, literally needle and thread, because it was her statement about the slut shaming from boys who found pubic hair to be gross because by the time they came of age sexually, all the girls removed their pubic hair. And so for girls who chose to have it, boys were saying it was icky. Mm. And she made these art pieces and they're exquisite. And the thing that happened was the school banned them from the art fair. And then the local newspaper heard about it and put it on the cover of the Pasadena newspaper with a big black banner across the pubic area saying censorship at, I won't say the school because then I'll get sued. But it was a big deal. And when this happened, this is Chris's cousin's daughter, I said to her, I would like to buy them. So the reason I'm telling you the story is, so they've been in my office behind the wall. And what happened is we did a Seder Zoom with my daughter's in-laws.
Oh, no.
And right behind my head. And in fact, while you're talking to my husband, I will go get one to show it to you. I'll show it to you at the end. So but when we're finished, I will show you what it looks like. But it's...
We didn't put two and two together in the context.
It took me a little while, and I was about to do a sort of national thing for Lionsgate, which is a company I recently worked with, and I was setting up my Zoom, and I had to do narration, and they had to send me documents to read, and it was kind of a big deal. And when I looked at the Zoom shot, I realized that I was about to go live around the world with two vaginas over my shoulder. and that I assumed that there would be some cards and letters. So I have switched it out since we're doing a lot of these Zoomings. So,
well, I'm sorry. Well, we'll see them afterward. I'm kind of excited.
I will show them to you. They're exquisite. They're exquisite.
Well, that piece is really great too.
And while we're there, can I also get the translation of the Japanese sumi-e painting, the symbols?
I don't know what it says. My friend Al and Suzanne Yankovic went to Japan. Well, you guys know each other, and they brought it back. I think it may be.
I think it says a 15-year-old with pubic hair sewn.
You're right.
Yeah. I mean, it could say fuck you. And then we'll also get cards and letters. And below it, weirdly enough, this is so great. I got to meet His Holiness the Dalai Lama. My daughter, our daughter, Annie, was very into Buddhism when she was a young child. And a friend of ours, Deborah Oppenheimer, arranged. He was doing a conversation with Houston Smith at UCLA. And we went, and then they kind of brought us back. And I had a contact for a second with the Dalai Lama. And so
I put him there. Wow. Another reason you don't need the tarot cards. You're hooked up.
Talk about the drop. Yeah.
So is your daughter not into Buddhism anymore?
Well, she's an adult. We don't talk about what she's into.
Yeah, she was just married. She's just married in this last summer. And our son is not married, but talking about it. And
well, he's engaged.
That's what I mean.
Well, that's more than talking about it.
Ah.
That's planning.
Oh.
Yeah. The talking part led up to the engagement. And then
now I get it.
But, you know, what's interesting when you have children, you're not allowed to talk about them anymore. It's funny, as they become adults, any questions about them become a little, it's challenging because.
Well, it goes through their publicists at this point.
Right.
I think that's smart of you guys.
It's their life, you know, it's their life. They need to be able to determine what they tell the world.
How it's
interpreted. And when you have public parents, you have to be super, super mindful more and more the older I get.
That's a great point because I think about that a lot when I see my friends on social media who have an adorable child and even friends that are judicious and private, but their kid will do, they'll get some video that's just the cutest. They're throwing their oatmeal on their face. So they throw it on Instagram and I think, oh, I just wonder how your 2-year-old is going to feel when they're 16.
Yeah.
And that's.
And people have different reactions to their childhoods. And the feelings associated with. So some people would probably like it and enjoy that. And then other people really don't don't want their childhood. It's theirs. It's not the world's. It's theirs.
Speaking of, you know, famous parents, so I don't know if everyone listening to this would know, a lot of people do, but Jamie Lee is the daughter of Tony.
Go on. You're looking it up. I love you.
I know.
That's
I'm
so
sorry.
Cute.
I get stage fright sometimes. Tony Curtis and Janet Lee. And what must that have been like, one wonders?
You know what? Honestly, I don't have super strong memories of growing up. I certainly have no memories of them together. I think they divorced when I was 3. I did not know him growing up. He was a sort of a shadow figure. He married many times, had many other children. We are all semi-close, the kids. But, you know, I really knew my mom better. I didn't really know them as movie people. Their fame sort of preceded them in a room. People would be excited that they would see these people, but I didn't have an association to the fame. Obviously, now I can look at a movie that they did and be impressed or whatever. And they both did some beautiful work. as actors. But I don't feel a particular connection to them. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to sort of take pride in it. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm proud that they came from nothing. And I say from nothing, meaning they came from no wealth at all. They were both very, very, you know, they were raised in very
poor.
I know. I hate the word. I'm trying not to use it.
Well, it applies.
It applies. You know, my mother was from Merced, California, and Tony was raised in the streets of Manhattan, but his father was a tailor. My mother, they both came from very meager backgrounds, and they both achieved great heights in our industry. And so I am most proud that they survived their lives, really, and that they were able to contribute artistically to the degree that they did. My mother was in a couple absolute classic films, Psycho, obviously. Touch of Evil is a great performance mm-hmm. of hers. And Tony also, Some Like It Hot is a great performance.
One of the greats,
And so they certainly achieved a lot. And I can't tell you that I was super, super close to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I also am old enough now, and they're gone long enough that, I just try to hold a positive feeling, as I hope our children, will hold for us when we're gone.
Yeah. Did you have like a nanny in the house who,
I don't remember. Honestly, I don't remember my early childhood at
That's
all.
So interesting. Yeah.
But I mean, we had a housekeeper, and my mother didn't work that much by the time I was in grade school, much, much less. So that's why I'm saying I wasn't like raised when they were at their height. When they were at their height in the 50s, I wasn't born until 58. So they, I didn't get that deep indoctrination of movie star parents. They were just sort of people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. And where did you, I'm assuming that your upbringings were slightly different. Where did you grow up, Chris?
I grew up in Greenwich Village, and my dad was English, and we had a house in London for a while, and we would go back and forth quite a bit. Mm. I have an English side of the family.
What did your dad do?
My dad was worked at the United Nations from the beginning of when that started in the late 40s.
Oh, wow.
And the house was filled with a lot of people from different countries, with artists as well, musicians, writers. When they would have a party, it was salon-ish in that sense. There were very interesting people, different mm-hmm. backgrounds. That's what was normal. I was exposed to that at an early age. It had been true with my grandparents in London as well. They had an artistic/political musical combination of friends, and this was similar, I guess, in some ways.
Mm-hmm. So you guys did have a kind of a similar upbringing in a sense. It's a little bit more.
I don't think
it's
so.
Dad, you didn't grow up in the Midwest with an insurance broker for a dad. And a
I think there was much more of an intellectual pursuit in Chris's side of the family, although my mother was brilliant, my mother was very, very bright and graduated college at 15.
Wow.
She was a very, very smart woman. She was extraordinary. But education was not an important thing in my home. And Tony didn't really have that. I mean, it wasn't a currency that was really what was talked about. Art was, but not necessarily an education. So it was different. But I mean, that's good. Are you putting Purell on? He's putting Purell on, like, in the middle of this.
Just to sit there.
Like,
yeah.
Well, here, I'll have some.
Tis the season.
Yeah, far out.
Well, I'm curious. Chris, didn't you actually... can you tell us about your family's role in the British government. Aren't?
Yeah.
Didn't you spend a little bit of time?
The my grandfather, Leslie Hayden Guest, was a doctor. His father had been, my great-grandfather was a doctor. He was a doctor. He fought in World War I. He was a doctor at some of those awful, famous battles that were Passchendaele, which was in Belgium, which was one of those slaughters. He eventually went into politics in England. He was a Labour MP. And then he was, as they say there, he was elevated to the House of Lords. And that then sets in motion for a hereditary peer, the title to go down through the family. And then you sit in the House of Lords if you choose to do that. And I was the fifth person to do that.
Oh.
I did that for several years before they abolished hereditary peers, and it's now life peerages. They're essentially appointed or just given. They're just given that by whoever's in government. The PM can say, "You're go, baby, go," and that's the actual phrase they use.
Good Lord!
Which doesn't sound like it would be parliamentary, but that's actually what it's been.
But there were robes.
There was robage.
Did you wear
and,
a wig?
Jamie was at the opening of Parliament once, and she was wearing a tiara. And,
yes, we went the one time that we attended the state opening of Parliament. Two things were interesting. One, well, not two things. Everything was interesting. But the wives, everyone in the gallery had to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning because you had to be in the building before they closed it and did bomb sweeps because the queen was going to be there.
Oh.
So, you know, you have to be there and you have to be in full gowns and tiaras at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my gosh.
And then the lords come in and then the queen comes in. And it was the first time as the monarchy is changing. It was the first time that the page, the young man who brought the queen her speech, it was the first time in history in England that the page turned his back on the queen and walked away from her, because it used to be you had to back away. And it was, they are changing, they are modernizing, they are transitioning the monarchy.
They're cutting
and
loose.
So it was the first time. And there was an audible.
Holy God.
Well, it was also the first time that someone from the House of Commons is summoned. Black Rod walks down the hallway and he knocks three times on the door. And then this whole ritual has been going on. And then they come into the chamber. And it was the first time during the Queen's speech where one of the people in the House of Commons audibly made a comment in the middle of her speech. So as she's speaking, which is something that's written for her, you heard, and that was another moment of, because that had never happened, because you would never do that while the queen was speaking, especially in the middle of a joke. You don't want to mess up the timing.
But I mean, it was a moment of transition, and it was going to be the only time that we attended a state opening of Parliament before they disbanded the hereditary peers and basically sent the robes home. You know,
the robes are kept. Well, they can be kept anywhere, but my robes were kept at a tailor in London that had been in business since the 1600s.
What was the name of it?
It was called Ede and Ravenscroft.
Right.
And they would send you letters on this great stationery to the Right Honorable the Lord Hayden Guest. We are pleased to serve your family. Thing. And then they're brought there in a horse-drawn carriage, and these guys put the robes on you, and it was a whole thing. And then I had the robes sent back here, because what am I going to do with these robes. It's hanging downstairs.
Well, Nick, but no,
Nick,
but
if
they,
you want to wear it while you're planing one day, you can.
But they,
I'd love
but
to
they,
take them for a
but they sent them back. I mean, they sent them back, and I will tell you, I know we've had this conversation before, but I also got a letter from the House of Lords asking for my hall pass back. Because they had given me a laminated with my image on it
sure.
that says Lady Hayden Guest with my name and picture and a chain that you had to wear when you were in
the building.
And they wrote a letter and said, you know, now that the hereditary peers are sort of no longer able to enter the building, we would like you to send it back.
Oh my gosh. Wait, what year? How long ago was this?
This was in the late, well, I guess 99 was, I first sat there in approximately 96. And then 99 was the last year, 99 or 2000.
Yeah. So you got to do it for a few years. And
yeah, no, I definitely, it was a fascinating thing to.
And how often would it end
because they reviewed the hereditary peers. Yeah.
Well, Tony Blair was elected.
The whole premise was this, why do we have people who, just by virtue of the fact that they were born into a family, why are they in the upper house of Parliament, which makes sense, obviously. Why would you? But the other thing is just as bad, because now it's basically cronyism, where someone can appoint 100 life peers and just basically bust them in for votes. So in a way, it's worse in some ways.
They should
make that an elected body at some point. I don't know if they will.
Well, but also it's frustrating. I'm over here, honey. It's also frustrating for me because Christopher would have been and was a very thoughtful, thinking, environmental person.
This Christopher?
This one right here. And that he would have applied all of those qualities.
Or not.
No, you would have. To that job. And the truth is he would have been a fantastic advocate.
How often would you have to go there?
Well, you don't ever have to go at all.
Oh.
That's the other oddity about this. And I would say that two-thirds of the lords didn't go on a weekly basis. They would, or some people never go in their lives. It's an odd situation. They'd go to vote potentially, but they would not show up all that often during a given week.
There was a gift shop.
Did you get anything?
Oh, yeah, we got a lot.
Swag.
Oven mitts. playing cards.
Sure.
Baseball hats.
Oh, that
sure.
is cool.
That's amazing.
I do think, I agree, that's a shame, though. On a much smaller scale, my grandfather was briefly the mayor of my little farm town in Illinois.
Ooh, Manuka.
And my dad has done a couple stints, and my uncles as well, on the school board. My dad is on the village board. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, we all suffer from this. Like, usually the people that we consider conscientious and with the requisite empathy and sense of responsibility are usually too smart to agree to run for office. Like right. The people you want leading us would never have the good sense not to.
Right.
And my dad has recently been talked into doing this and you know, we're all so glad that someone whose values we respect, and it's a shame that because of a changing of the guard that we don't have your calm mind involved in the
and someone who thinks and who reads and studies, and you know, it's a real attribute, and it's their loss.
One of the reasons we were sorry is because you would scoff at this sentiment, and you're welcome to, but we will laud you just the same.
I just want to interject that I may have to call the authorities because your all's haircuts look suspiciously crisp for having been in a six-week stay-at-home.
As a friend would say, dude, if when I take these off, I mean, this is so goofy. It's beyond belief.
Oh, really?
It's just, oh my God, this is just brutal.
Okay.
No, this is, I'm about 5 minutes away from using that Dremel, basically, that I have in its little kit with all those cool attachments and just going crazy.
Well, listen, you guys, we're just so thrilled to have you on the podcast. And you're just such wonderful, cool people. And I mean, you gave me a gift on my birthday a couple of years ago that was the most fun, creative gift I've ever gotten, except for all the gifts Nick has ever given me, of course. But I mean, it was just so... You gave me about a dozen different things.
Are you Oh, that.
But you're not allowed to talk about that on the radio, are you?
What?
Yes.
From the pleasure chest. No, you gave me about a dozen different things, and there was a whole card with all the, you know, instructions and what everything was. And I get stage fright, like when I forgot Jamie's parents' names, but I can't try to list them all because I'll
there was a bomb. Breakdown,
but. There was a bong.
There was a bong.
There was a book. There was a whistle. There was a charm. There was all these things.
There was
things.
A loudspeaker that had different settings.
Oh, my God.
Different robot
voices. We're going to use that in our band. We're going to use that in Nancy and Beth, that loudspeaker. Yeah. We got different ones for the band, actually. We got more.
It was a good-ass gift.
It was such a great gift. And I just really, it just kind of tells a lot about you guys.
I hope that this will make us want to actually be in the same room together at some point and that we can expand this beyond bon mot and good laughs, but that we can actually reach out and touch each other at some point.
We are ready for that anytime, any day. Okay. We're always
thank
here.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yes, thank you for having us. And thanks for not giving us the fucking good mic. And you guys sound like these cool DJ people, and we are going to sound terrible. And
all
that's
right.
Okay.
Thank you, dear listener, for tuning in to another installment of In Bed with Nick and Megan, featuring the just indescribably delicious Jamie Lee Curtis and Christopher Guest. Thank you. Good night.
In Bed with Nick and Megan is an Earwolf production. It's produced by Megan Mullally, Kevin Bartelt, and Michael Landry. Executive produced by Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon. Music by Nancy and Beth, which can be found at www.nancyandbeth.com. If you enjoyed In Bed with Nick and Megan, make sure to rate it and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.